Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
This podcast is part of the Robots Radio Rocket Club, a program designed to help all podcasts reach their full potential. For information about joining the Robots Radio Rocket Club, check out robotsradio.net.
Hello, hello, and welcome back to another episode of Two Girls, One Ship, the podcast where we analyze and rate and review all that the world of video game romances has to offer. I'm Genesis, the girl who has been the source of bruises and of joy.
And I'm Bravada, the girl who, yeah, can't relate to that. I'm just joy. No bruises.
Except for when you stumble over a curb and bruise yourself.
Yes. Bruises from clumsiness, indeed.
So if you are new here, welcome to the beautiful chaos. But you should know that our podcast centers on character and romance analysis and doesn't shy away from exploring the fun of fucking.
Or from the deep emotional connections built between two or more characters using specific in-game dialogue. So if you want to stay spoiler-free, then this certainly is not the podcast for you.
So here's your fucking spoiler alert.
Thanks for the spoiler alert, N7. Act 2 spoilers abound tonight. And just like with all of our previous episodes, we'll assume that you have some background knowledge of the game and character in question, but we will be providing context for those of you who may be unfamiliar.
Today, we are still in Faerun, but we are newly arrived in this realm. We were born one among many, one egg in a pool of dozens. As we grew in strength and size, our number became smaller, more dying every day. You yourself killed a few kin, culling the weak whilst building your power. The whole of your existence within this buzzing hive of warriors is honed and focused to one purpose. Kill all Illithids. Your greatest dream is a dream shared amongst all your kind. To bring your Lich Queen Vlakith, the head of a mind flayer, and ascend. It may be ages since the days your people were enslaved to the Illithid Empire, but the single-minded collectivism of the Githyanki is not too different from the hive mind of the Mind Flayers. That and their penchant for colonialism. Of course, a terrible fate to befall a child of Gith is to become infected with an Illithid tadpole, and that is just what happened to you. Now, your blood thrums with the will to survive, and the call to cleanse your mind of this horrific taint beating incessantly. You are Lazel from Baldur's Gate 3.
A fine evening, don't you think? The moonlight shines warmly on us. The breeze caresses our faces. Hideous. All of it. Would that I were doing battle up there, among the tears. Look above. Watch the moon cross the sky. The tears follow behind it, rocky bodies tumbling through the sea of night. One of them is my crash, Kalir. Your curiosity is to be commended. Githyanki are hatched in creches all throughout realm space. Kalir is one of many. It's there I first saw a Kithrak mount a red dragon, where I slit my cousin's throats at the Varsh's command. But enough of this. You are wasting your resting time. Come dawn, we resume our search for a creche.
So, like Lazel said, she was born in Creche Kalir, also known as Stardock. She is a Githyanki, sharing a common ancestor with their cousin race of Githzerai, whose name is forgotten, but the race that were enslaved to the Illithid Empire. The split happened soon after the successful rebellion against the Illithids, led by Mother Gith herself. This led to the warlike culture of the Githyanki and the intellectual superiority of the Githzerai. The Githyanki live mainly in outposts spread amongst the realms called creches. And the blessed few who prove themselves get to live ageless and timeless in the astral plane. Lazel, like her other kin, received the customary Githyanki martial education, learning how to battle, raid, and plunder, all in the name of Vlakith.
This education was brutal, which if you've already played this game and visited the creche in the monastery, you have a clue on how even the young Gith children are absolutely nasty and brutal. This also gave Lazel an unhealthy dose of a racial superiority complex. It's not enough to hate Illithid, but Githyanki also have a sharp disdain for other races, citing them as inferior. The Lazel you meet aboard the Nautiloid holds on to these beliefs, having set out in search of a Mind Flayer to behead and present to her immortal queen as proof of her worth. But she was tadpoled alongside you and every other companion on board, a cruel mockery of her ancestral feud with the Illithids. Some of the first words she says to you in her clipped and sneering voice is that you need to find a creche. Only there will you find a Zathisk, a purification device, to cure you of the tadpoles. It's a compelling offer, but you'd have to go willingly in search of Githyanki, something most people in Faerun would avoid.
In your wanderings during Act 1, it is inevitable that you will come across the Emerald Grove. You can find a poor tiefling there who has spotted a Githyanki nearby. Unfortunately, his companion didn't survive the encounter. He will tell you where he spotted the Gith, and you get to see a bit of the famed Githyanki violence. She will demand that the tiefling kneel at her feet. She will not hesitate to intimidate or harm anyone who would stand in her way to purification. She is xenophobic, arrogant, and proud of her race in a way that leads her to frequently comment on Gith culture and customs as a means to illustrate Githyanki superiority. She doesn't seem to care about the feelings of others. And to romance her, you'll have to defrost this Ice Queen.
Yes, the defrosting Ice Queen. A very common trope for female video game romance characters for some reason. A lot of people hate Lazel, and I can understand it. She is rather unlikable. She's a bitch. But, for me, it's something I rather like about her, honestly. Because in a game where most of your companions are keeping something from you, it's a breath of fresh air to be so honest. Brutally honest, I'll grant that. Lazel is no Karlach offering honesty with kindness. But Lazel is also a young Githyanki who, for probably the first time in her life, is working with non-Gith. The Gith are essentially interdimensional fascist colonizers, not known for their willingness to coexist with other races. She is in the same brainworm predicament as the rest of you, and this forced proximity has led to a serious case of cognitive dissonance. Any other Gith would have cut you down without a second thought. But Lazel's trying to cure all of you. Even Shadowheart, who is super bigoted against Lazel right from the get. Which, fair, given what we know about Githyanki, but still. Lazel mentions the ruthlessness of her kin time and again, but she doesn't seem to demonstrate it herself.
And once we get to the creche, her whole worldview might be shaken. But for now, we have to discuss her growing attraction to you. As a Gith, she is attracted to strength. And in fact, to be a worthy mate, you must prove yourself in battle. Once you have done this, meaning that you earn medium approval with her, she will offer a night of painful passion. But only if you haven't romanced anyone else yet. Lazel will kind of slut shame you in that case, saying haughtily that she prefers fresh meat. and you missed out on her. So there will be no polyamory whatsoever when romancing Lazelle. It's either just her or someone else entirely. It's actually pretty funny. If you don't romance her, she will seek out a one-night stand with either Will, Gale, or Astarion. No, she won't be able to sleep with Gale. He'll talk too much. And then she will express great disappointment with Will's performance. But she only has good things to say about her night with Astarion. If you happen to be fresh meat, though, here's what she says.
I have a confession. I was too hasty to judge you. I thought you witless, gutless, unimpressively bland. Now, well, you've earned my respect and more still. You've proven your wits. You are efficient and dominant, in and out of battle. You've proven your courage. I swear you would tear the horns off one dragon to plunge into another. And you're hardly bland. Your scent alone is enough to make my neck sweat and my hairs stand on end. Good. I want to taste you. Perhaps tonight, perhaps later, but I want it all the same. Do you?
I love the goading way she says, do you? I also just want to point out that Lazelle, like, well, if you're just listening to this on the surface, it sounds almost gross in a way because of, like, how physical and, like, you know, liquid stuff she's talking about. But, like, to me, it just highlights the fact that Lazelle is not connected to her emotions in any way. If she is only in it for your body right now because she doesn't know anything else.
It's one of the reasons that I almost romanced her out the get-go because I was like, damn, somebody just wants me because they find me fucking hot right now? Let's go.
Yeah, honestly, that's a thing for a lot of people. So in case, you know, that wasn't clear enough, Lazelle wants your body. She has no concept of sex with romance or feelings involved at all at this time. She's just merely blowing off steam or satisfying a sudden urge. That's the Githyanki way. So this conversation can happen at any point randomly in Act 1 if you've earned the requisite approval, which is almost no effort at all, medium approval. But the night in question won't happen until after you've dealt with the goblins or killed the tieflings in the goblin camp. Before we do that, though, let's talk about another big Act 1 quest. Going to the creche. Finally, we're listening to Lazelle, because, like, that's all she's said this entire time. As far as she's concerned, this is the only path forward, the only true cure. Auntie Ethel is going to pluck out your eye. Halson is going to say, Oakfather willing, you find someone else. Nettie is going to try and poison you or make you promise to poison yourself. O'Mellum, at best, gives you a ring. But ultimately, no one can cure you of your tadpoles. Except, apparently, a Zathisk. Lazelle has been rude, aggressive, and arrogant, but she's also very pragmatic about all this. Keep in mind that, while we met every companion on what was arguably one of the worst days of their entire lives, or kind of a good day if you're a Astarion or Karlach, this is Lazelle's living nightmare. Like, culturally, her whole culture is about killing Illithids and how bad they are.
Her constant berating about the Zathic is the only show of fear she'll allow herself. But Lazelle is terrified. And the only solution is her mind is to find the other Githyanki. When you do, and you choose a certain dialogue tree that has Kithrak Voss ordering his Gith to kill you, she will be shocked. She doesn't believe any true Gith of his rank would ever consider just killing good kin rather than purifying them with the Zathisk. Up until now, she will have dismissed any critiques or oddities about her culture as a rogue error. But the cognitive dissonance, the holding of two contradictory beliefs at the same time, grows and grows.
I like to think that Voss was only trying to kill you because he knew the Zathiks would kill you worse. So he's trying to spare you that because he's already in his little revolution at that point. But who knows? Anyway, once you make it to the creche, and when she isn't commenting on how lax and subpar it is compared to Creche Kaleer, you also see her vulnerability. There is a portrait hanging on the wall in the hallway of Lacketh, their eternal queen. And she is basically vibrating with cultish fervor. Lazel is so excited. It's the only true emotion we've seen from her, beyond anger or disgust up until this point. The Zathisk and the creepy doctor obsessed with studying tadpoles is just beyond this portrait of Lacketh. This is where you can start to encourage Lazel down one path or another. Her narrative journey is defined by whether she remains faithful to Lacketh, or if she learns the truth about the Prince of the Comet. Once again, it's a choice between a path of restriction or a path of freedom. Despite growing evidence to the contrary, it is not Lazel's first instinct to assume her culture is flawed. It will take her quite a while to come to the idea that maybe, just maybe, it was all a lie.
A major piece of evidence that Vlaketh is lying is the simple fact that the Zathisk isn't a cure. It's just a device designed to kill the poor infected soul slapped down in there. The Githyanki don't have a cure, just a solution. But Lazel is still a believer. So instead of seeing this as a betrayal, she instantly assumes that a traitor to Vlaketh must have tampered with the Zathisk. Then we get to the actual confrontation with Vlaketh herself. And whether you're forthcoming about the artifact or not, Lazel's prime concern is the supposed traitor. But of course, there is no traitor. I mean, unless you count Kithrak Voss, but that's a whole nother story. So, you go down into the bowels of the monastery and confront the Inquisitor and Vlaketh herself. She charges you with a seemingly simple task. Kill the invader inside the artifact, and she will reward you greatly. She will even ascend Lazel, the ultimate dream of all young Githyanki. Lazel assures you, you will do this, or you will die screaming at the end of her sword. But also, Vlaketh will kill you dead immediately if you refuse. So, you know, don't do that.
Did you ever do that? Because I did.
No.
I thought I should be like a little sassy douche to her, and she smote me. And my game was over. Instant reload.
I did not get smoted. I tend to have a reverence for gods in video games. If I'm told that a god is telling me to do something, I tend to do it.
But she's not a god. She's just a lich bitch.
I didn't know that on my first playthrough.
That's fair. That's fair. Okay. So back to Vlaketh not smiting us because we go into the astral prism. So we go into the artifact because this is Lazel's personal quest. And, you know, it's just little old Dream Guardian, a.k.a. the Emperor, which we don't know yet. But whether you try to kill him or not, they can't... Well, whether you try to kill your Dream Guardian or not, they can't be killed. So you might as well not try because then they're more of a douche to you later in the game. And you come out of the prism with the knowledge that Vlaketh has lied. And then the Inquisitor tries to kill you, because you were never going to get out of there alive. And Lazel, sweet Lazel, the Highland cow of Githyanki, at least at first, assumes that this must have been some final test of faith from the Lich Queen. Just like Shadowheart, Lazel must overcome a huge amount of conditioning to see the truth, if that is the path you choose to encourage her on. We are going to assume you are pushing her towards defying Vlakith, and we're going to talk about her various endings either way later on, but definitely defying Vlakith is the better option for Lazelle as an individual. In the end, both Shadowheart and Lazelle highlight the major downsides towards this kind of cultural brainwashing. Rather than a cohesive, stable unit, they breed individuals who struggle to think for themselves and who doubt their innate intuition.
So with this quest done, the next time the two long rest will be when Kithrak Voss makes his next appearance and affirms that yes, he is secretly running a revolution against the False Queen. He's the one who tells us yes, Orpheus lives, and he is the true son of Mother Gith. He requests that you meet up with him at Sharess's Caress in Baldur's Gate. So we won't get to finish this questline for quite some time. We still have all of Act 2 to get through. Lazelle will have a lot to think about and a lot of time to do it. And this is when she must make her choice. Betray Vlakith or stay loyal to the cause of Orpheus? So, choose whatever you want, but you might change your mind about staying loyal to Vlakith once you hear her endings later on. Anyways, back to the Goblin Camp. So we dealt with them one way or another, and the party at the next long rest is going to have its huge mater party! Woo! And it's where the first romance scene happens for most of the romances. And Lazelle is no different. When you speak with her at the party, she will tell you how hot she thinks you and your victory in battle are.
I have seen the Kithraki tear a screaming Neogi's legs from its belly to fashion into blades, yet they could not match your nerve today. It was enough to drive me to madness. I smell their blood on you still. I smell your moisture. A glorious reward for a glorious battle. Go on, have your fun. And do not wipe away a single bead of sweat. It's intoxicating.
Okay, so like, even her flirting is intimidating. I mean, it's not necessarily the way to my heart, but I love a woman who knows what she wants. I think it's funny that her and Gale actually don't get together if you aren't romancing either of them, because he has a certain preference for natural musk as well, apparently. They might have got along very well, I don't know. Anyway, the knight is young, and so is Lazelle, and she's ready to put that fit gith body to use, putting your character's body to its limits. She has outlined that this is just a one-night stand, just casual sex, but it won't need to stay that way. Before we get into the sexy times, though, we need to take a quick mid-break. We need to hear some fun facts, listen to sponsors of the show, and of course, thank our lovely patrons.
Yes, so let's do a mid-break dance. So I just looked it up really quick, and there are definitely some dances that start with the letter L. There, of course, is the lambada, but there's also a lap dance, which I feel like Lazelle would definitely give. I could see her giving an epic lap dance. Yeah, let's go with that one.
That, or she'd be like, stop with all these frivolities and just ride me, you know, like she wouldn't care. She's so straightforward. I feel like she doesn't do foreplay.
Ooh, either that or she would be the one getting the lap dance because Tab made her do it, like sit dumb in that chair and obey. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's actually another fun fact that I didn't write, is if you want to dominate her in her sex scene, you have to pass an intimidation check.
Oh, I get to that.
Oh, okay.
Of course, I'm going to talk about an intimidation check during a sex scene. Come on now.
Okay, you can do the first you can do the first fact if you want.
Lazelle is voiced by Devorah Wilde, who also was Nika Yankovic in Cyberpunk Phantom Liberty, and a number of other media performances, one of which is called Stolen Life, a Bulgarian TV show. Devorah was born in Bulgaria and speaks Bulgarian, Russian, and English fluently.
Yeah, she's like a main character or something, because her IMDb says she's been on 44 episodes of that show. Yeah, I love her TikTok. I follow her and all of the main actors from Baldur's Gate 3. Anyway, if you actually play as Lazelle in this game, like as an origin character, when you start the game, a Githyanki fighter named Losir will help, I think I said that right, will help you aboard the Nautiloid in the beginning instead of Lazelle, but he will promptly die once it crashes, at least giving you some Gith armor early on for like Shadowheart or something.
That is one of my future playthrough plans, is playing as Origin Lazelle, romancing Karlach.
Ooh, loot his body, then you get armor.
Yay. All right. You can visit Kresh Kalir, a.k.a. Stardock, in the D&D campaign Waterdeep, Dungeon of the Mad Mage, which I think is really cool, and I need to see if I have this one shot. Pretty sure I do.
That was cool. So there wasn't many fun facts about Lazelle, because like I said earlier, she's like super honest and you know everything about her. But I looked up Githyanki lore because I haven't played that much Dungeons and Dragons. But so you will hear Lazelle talk a little bit about this in game. So their capital city, Tunarath. When I see that word, it makes me think of like Tir na n'og, but that's like Irish mythology. Anyway, so located in the astral plane, it is built on the remains of a six-armed deity known as the One in the Void. And one of the audio clips we have later in the episode will have Lazelle referencing the One in the Void. I saw an art of this and I'm like, of course the Githyanki would build their biggest city on a corpse. Like, duh.
Yeah. Yeah. It's also like nowhere. It's like built in inside of a dead deity. I love it.
Like, how many gods are just dead floating around in the astral plane? Like, I don't understand.
I also want to know what creature Orpheus is in. Like, because you look at it and it's a skull.
It's a skull. Whose skull? Because that's exactly what I thought when I saw the artwork of Tunarath. Is I was like, okay, there's a giant skull with like chains through the eye sockets, like holding this building up. And I'm like, hey, Orpheus was inside a skull too. Like, whose skull was that? Was it Two in the Void?
Ooh. I hope that's not Mother Gith. Like, because you know how, like, Vlakis is ginormous? Like, maybe Gith, Mommy Gith was too.
Dude, but, like, to hold her son imprisoned in her skull would be just the sort of spiteful, vindictive shit Vlakis would do, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty heinous. So I'm going to headcanon it. Horribly. Ha! Headcanon. That's bad. Okay, moving on. Vlakith is actually the 157th Vlakith, but she was the one who brokered the deal between Tiamat and the Githyanki. She is the reason Orpheus is kept in an infernal prison, and that the Gith have the red dragons. It's crazy to think that she's ruled for about 1,000 years due to her being a lich. That's Lich, L-I-C-H, but also a bitch. So, you know, either one. And a lich is an undead mage in D&D lore. Spotify. Our listeners are amazing, and I appreciate you all, especially the 181 of you that have left us ratings. That makes me so happy. I love that so much. We are so close to our 200 goal. I think we'll have to do something super special for it, if we hit 200 ratings. I don't know what that is yet, but I'll think of something super awesome. We also have 3 new patrons to shout out. Holy shit. Now, I'm pretty sure that I read off a golden Caitlyn before, but I'm not 100% positive. So I'm just going to go through all of them. So Dis is new. Hi, appreciate you. Evie from HR. Evie, I heard your name all the time on Cyberpunked. Cyberpunk apostrophe D, where I guested on for several episodes on there. And I know that you were a patron over there as well. So thank you for coming and joining over here on the Goyles. And again, a golden Caitlyn. Big shout outs. Major hearts. All the love. Thank you. And of course, our special shout outs go to Toasty and Apollo, Becky and Daddy Batnight, Mistios and Muffiny Cake, Winifer, and now Evie from HR and Lavellany.
Yay!
Thank you guys so much. I swear we need to start doing merch so they can like get stickers at least, something. Also, I want stickers. Okay.
Love, laugh, tequila, oh, yeah. Baby.
Tits, tats, turians, and tangents. Something. All right, Jen, are you ready to make even your tongue sore from a night of passion?
My tongue is normally sore by the end of an episode, so...
Oh!
Gith train relentlessly. We know our bodies inside and out. Let me show you. Close your eyes and submit. I am ready. You awake in pain. Your back, your hands, even your tongue ache. It's time to rise. Dawn is upon us. Time for pleasure has passed. I might take more later, should my whims so carry me. Up now. The sun soon rises.
Every breath, every blink proves exhausting. A long day awaits you.
Now, this scene starts out with Lazel leading you to the back of the camp, with that broken down archway and stone walls. You know the spot. She strikes a very sexy door pose, and then you tentatively follow her in. Now, when you look back up, she is striding towards you. Completely naked. Everything on display proudly. You have so many options when Lazel asks you to submit. You can choose to close your eyes and be hers, or you can pass an intimidation check and say, that isn't how it's going to go. You submit to me. Now, passing that check, she rewards you with a look of confirmation that you did the right thing. Those were the right words. She is ready for you as she lies down on a bedroll. In such a cute, unexpected, coy pose. And you do a body crawl all the way up to her neck. You begin kissing at her, and her hands immediately travel south towards your goods. And with that beautiful, shocked inhale from Tav, you give in to the sensation, kissing her further. This is not how Lazel wants to play. The little brat shoves at your shoulder, and rolls you over. But you already said that you were not going to submit. So you follow through with another roll of your own. And she is on the ground again. Arm outstretched, grasping for purchase, getting leverage. But you grab her wrist and pull her back towards you. You go where I want you. Now, overall, for me, this scene aligns with the Lazelle that we know to this point. And honestly, I really enjoyed it. I also hope that you liked the little gasps I left in there. They make my brain tingle.
Did you ever see on TikTok where someone did a mod and they put, like, different companions in the other companion's scene? So someone put, like, Astarion as Lazelle in the scene and watched it play out. Watched it play out like that. Or, like, as Will's dance or something. There's so many.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are cute and some of them are not cute, but enjoyable nonetheless. Yeah. This ain't for me. This thing ain't for me right now. But it's fine. So we're in Act 2 now, and nothing really happens Lazelle-wise for the majority of it. Sometime after your first night of painful passion together, Lazelle may comment on how you have been behaving differently around her, and in her eyes, clearly wish to sleep with her again. She will reiterate that she never promised more than one night, but you can try to convince her to taste again. There will be an implied second sex scene that happens off screen if you do convince her. Something else occurs in Act 2 as well. The lock-in scene. This is the point at which you are in an established relationship with a character, and in the case of Lazelle, only her. She is monogamous. During a random long rest, given you have completed the crush in Act 1 and have a high enough approval with her, as we most certainly do in this playthrough, she will wake you up in the night for a fight.
A parasite grips my mind. My own people hunt me. But I am gnawed by an even greater torment. You. My thoughts are hallowed ground. Yet you've crawled your way in, uninvited. I'm obsessed by the ground under your feet and the wind over your head. I see your face just before I sleep and after I wake. I ask myself, are you worthy, Sacfonastu? There is only one way for you to prove it. Don't be ridiculous. We fight. I test you in battle. Dance with me. Bleed with me. Bruise me so that you might possess me. Do it then. Make me yours.
I know with every single fiber of my being that if V could just skip to the romance of Act 3 Lazelle would be new Basil for her. Like, it's great. It's amazing. Maybe we can body swap at the end. Like, give me this girl here who wants me to fight for the right to be with her. Look, okay. In nature, in even modern day society, I swear it, that the strongest men, the male dominant of the species, has to fight for the right to possess their mate. For the Githyanki, that part just doesn't matter. You still have to fight for the right to have your mate. And instead of fighting a rival or a competitor for the mate, you have to fight the mate themselves. Look, I've sparred. I've fought with partners in the past. I mean, not necessarily like a conquest like this. Like, I didn't have to beat up my husband in order for him to say yes. I will take you as my spouse. No, but I don't know. I like that I got to let her. She bled me too. It's not like I just stood there and wailed on her. She hit me back.
I mean, it's an actual combat sequence. Like, it's not a cutscene of fighting. It's you actually fighting Lazelle. And she will disparage you if you use any poisons or potions too. Like, you're literally fighting her in the real sense of the word. And the part I liked is when she said, "What makes you worthy?" or something like that. I loved that because I think for me, when I hear Lazelle talking, like, some people critique the fact that she's so obsessive about you, or, and she uses the word obsession, and like how your bruises mark her and mark you with her bruises that she gave you and stuff like that. And it's possession and obsession. But like, I feel like it's because that, I mean, that's just like Gith culture. She has no concept of what love is. So what I think she's feeling is she's falling in love with you. But she has no idea what that is. So she's like, oh my God, I'm like obsessed with you. And then she's like trying to do the whole thing of, are you worthy? So fight me, bitch. You know, I've never been in a fight. I mean, I've been in plenty of verbal fights, but never a physical one. I'm a soft, squishy lover, not a fighter. So I wouldn't do this. I mean, unless she was already to the point of like, I want to protect you versus I want to fight you first, then she can protect me forever. I love her so much. I love Lazelle. She's my best friend in every playthrough. But yeah, this is what keeps me from romancing her, because it starts off like this and it's just never the character I'm playing, because I usually just play some aspect of myself and there's no part of me that finds this attractive.
Okay, so I have a few more thoughts on this, but I really feel like we need to play the next clip first.
Squaw! Lazelle's touch is unusually gentle. Her fingers lightly graze your bruises and wipe away your sweat.
No more! I can't bear it. I've torn flesh from monsters and men. I've laughed as they suffered. But you, I don't want to hurt you. I want to protect you. For you to protect me. I am yours. Say the words. Jack Varnashdew, source of my bruises.
Source of my bruises. Oh, okay. I love it. I love it so much. Because the same idea applies here. Someone who can overpower you is also someone who can protect you. Lazelle is strong in her own right, proven many, 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 many times over. So for her to be okay with being vulnerable, she has to know that you are worthy of that. And you are worthy of her vulnerability by showing that you can protect her when she can't protect herself. Source of my bruises is not something most would hear as endearing, but for her, it's a way to show it. It's her saying, I don't know how to say I love you. I don't know that word and its true meaning yet, but the fact that you are somebody who can, you are now somebody who can hurt me. And not necessarily in the physical aspect of it, because anybody could walk up and punch you in the face. That's not how I feel she's saying this. But you have the ability to hurt me emotionally now, because I have let you beyond that wall, beyond that barrier. You are the source of my bruises.
Yeah, I think that affectionate pet name is obviously very Githyanki-centric. It doesn't work. It doesn't work at all in the real world. Like, this, no one would look at someone calling you, like, giving someone bruises out of love. Like, that makes no sense. It is not good in the real world. This is a fantasy setting, obviously. people have pointed out, like, oh, well, what if Lazelle was a man? Like, can you imagine how that dynamic would play out if a man said the same thing? And it's like, yeah, culturally, for Githyanki, I think it would make sense. Like, I'm not looking at it as a DV situation, you know, because that's what people are trying to portray as, like, it only works because she's a woman and barely even then. But I don't think that it's a Gith thing. And also, to me, I think that must be some sort of endearment in Gith language. But I don't think that that's what you are to her, even at this point. Because later she gives you a new nickname, and I think that's what you've been the whole time. Like, after you've gotten past her walls and you are now embedded beyond them, I think you've always been the nickname she'll get to in Act 3. She didn't know what else to call it. Honestly, like, she has no concept of this. They don't have it in their culture. It's almost like in Mass Effect when the Turians would kind of just have sex to blow off steam, but to such an extreme degree that the Turians don't do, you know, because the Githyanki are so much more warlike than the Turians are even. Like, they have breeding programs. Only certain Githyanki are allowed to lay eggs, and the other ones just have sex to literally blow off steam, or because the urge took them, they have no emotional connections. They don't know what that is. There's no, like, nuclear family units in Githyanki culture. So this is the word she has for what she thinks you are right now.
And I assume that it's more of a tribal upbringing, because if one female Githyanki is the one that's laying the 30 eggs, there's no way that all those 30 yeah. kids are calling her mom, you know?
No.
Nope. That's not how that's going to work.
Yeah, we saw how it worked a little bit in Kresh Elec, and it's like the kids are already being raised in the cruel, like, laughing at pain sort of way that you see those kids playing with, I don't remember what that thing's called, the thing that's allergic to magic, so you can't use spells on it. They're like, there's one in a chest, and they're, like, tormenting it, those little kids with their mage hands. And it's like, that's the culture they're raised in. The kids will comment on you all the time if you talk to them in the creche. Like, they don't have parental love, even, or familial love. How many cousins did Lazelle kill herself? Like, she doesn't know what that is yet. This is the first time, like, yes, they're a collectivist society, and they're allegedly all working towards the same goal, but the goal they're working towards is becoming fodder for Vlakith, unbeknownst to them. So no, they don't have the same communal sense that most collective societies in real life have, where everyone's trying to help everyone else. They're just a ant hive working towards one goal, and they're all able to be sacrificed. None of them matter at all.
Right. Oh, I had one more thought, and then I think I lost it. Oh, right. So this whole fight scene also reminded me a little bit of a scene that you can have with the Iron Ball. When you bring him back from the Fade, or, you know, like, you come back from the Fade. And he has these feelings of, like, I don't know what to do with this level of fear that I'm holding on to. And he's literally asking Cassandra to beat him with a stick. And then he asks you to do it. And if you go through all of it, you know, it's like, please, like, I need this level of pain right now in order to process the emotions that I'm dealing with. I can also see that a little bit with what's going on with Lazelle here.
Yeah. I think Qunari are very similar to Githyanki in a lot of ways as a culture. They're all cog in the machine people trying to spread their superiority. Although, unlike Qunari, Gith don't allow for just anyone to come believe what they believe and be a part of their culture. You better just have a flat nose and serrated ears, or you ain't cool enough.
Yeah.
I forgot I wrote down one more thought about how she speaks in this audio clip. To me, it sounded more casual, and, like, the way, the tone and the words she used were, like, the way she was talking was to someone that she's close to. Not like how she normally speaks, where it kind of seems like a performance almost. She's very imperious and active voiced, like she's giving military orders. But in this clip, it's like, it's, to me, it sounds like the first time when you're in her romance, if you're befriending her, there's different points at which this occurs. But in this point, it sounds like the first time Lazelle is actually speaking for Lazelle rather than just going off what she knows, the inner guiding voice of her culture. Now it's Lazelle talking about what she wants.
Agreed. All right. So it is now the end of Act 2, where we get the next bit of Githyanki aggression. Some Githyanki monks are attacking you in the middle of a nice long rest outside of Baldur's Gate, and your dream guardian is demanding help. So you go into the astral prism again, and lo and behold, we learn the identity of the nocturnal dream invader. It is the Emperor. Dun dun dun. Oh, and the Prince of the Comet himself, Orpheus, is also here. Oh my god, no way. Turns out his superpowers he inherited from dear Mommy Gith are key in resisting the hive mind of the Netherbrain. The Emperor is just borrowing that power, and it's clear that Vlokith meant for you to kill Orpheus, not the Emperor. Or perhaps both. Not quite sure. She never really says. Now, the revelation that Orpheus is still alive is the final death knell to Lazelle's loyalty to Vlokith. Now, as she's already doubting, or she will label Orpheus as the traitor. No matter what, though, she has you by her side.
Shaq Vonashdu. I thought I'd seen the whole of you. Mighty as Tiamat's dragons, monumental as the one in the void. But now, I see more in you still. You are iron and steel, yes, but you are also silk and satin. Soon, I would know you again. Not to claw you, but to caress you. Not to be burned in your heat, but to be bathed in your warmth. Truthfully, it took more courage to ask for a soft touch than it would to meet the gaze of the Ninefold Dragon. Thus far, I've taunted you, devoured you, battled you. Now, I want more than anything to soothe you.
Okay, like, this is my jam right here. Okay, this is so my jam. So my thing is, like, what we were just talking about with Githyanki culture, like, they've beaten the weakness in their mind out of their children, but vulnerability and sensitivity and compassion and gentleness are the opposite of weakness. Like, those are some of the strongest traits you can have because it hurts so much to put yourself out there and to be that way in a world that is just pain, that is just iron and steel so many times. It's hard to be a silk and satin person in an iron and steel world. But it's best if you're both. Honestly, you need a little bit of fight sometimes and a little bit of gentleness sometimes. And I love that Lazelle is embracing that side of her because she has it, as I'm sure most Gith do naturally. Her tempering as a child growing up, and now she's a young Gith adult, you know, she's still in a place where she can learn to be different and see. She's so open-minded for a Gith that she's able to even open her mind to this point. I just love that about her. I love that this little journey she's on with her lover. It's great. Do you have thoughts? I see thoughts.
Yeah, sorry. I read too much book porn. And when you said satin and lace and steel and iron, I was like, are we going to start talking about velvet wrapped steel?
It's velvety hardness. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I read book porn too.
I mean, it's kind of true though, because Lazelle kind of is velvet wrapped steel. But yeah. I don't think she wants to hear that.
That's why I said she's like Gith version of like a wide-eyed Highland cow. Like she's not as, like she talks a big game, but she's kind of all bark some bite. When you compare to other Gith, her being so young and her refusing to use any kind of Illithid powers and just being a normal fighter, like she's the most normcore out of all the companions and she's probably a mid-level Gith at best. Once at the very beginning of the game, obviously when she's like level 12, she's a kick-ass bitch. But, you know, like, she's not anything to write home about among the Gith. But she, as herself on her own, as our companion, just becomes this best, most awesome girl. So I love her forever. So act three. I shouldn't have had two glasses of wine. Anyway, we have arrived in the city of Baldur's Gate, and we have a brothel to go to. When we get there, we'll find Voss pleading with Devil Daddy Raphael for help, with Raphael chuckling theatrically to himself and not helping the gift, probably in his head thinking up some new poem he's going to quote at you. He's hilarious. I love him so much. But then you show up right at the tail end of their conversation, everyone's favorite obsession, and Raphael is giddy. He's like, oh, here you go, a deal. He'll give you the Orphic hammer, capable of freeing Orpheus from the infernal prison, if you promise to give him the Netherese crown once the Netherbrain is defeated. You can either take the deal to get the hammer, or later break into Raphael's house to steal it. Or you could take the deal and then break into his house and steal and destroy your deal paperwork so you don't have to make good on your end of the bargain. But either way, no matter what you do, you need to get that hammer. For Lazelle's sake. At some point, Vlaketh and her pointy-ass cheekbones will come into your camp and demand that Lazelle bow before her and accept her decree to kill Orpheus. For a supposed god queen, she's really desperate.
Ugh, why are you so obsessed with me? Lazelle can either accept Vlaketh again or spit in her giant-ass face, siding with the true son of Gith. The rest of her personal quest must wait for the final battle, as the Emperor won't let us back inside the prism until then, before we make our way to the little canoe over the deathly still waters of the Morphic Pool. Lazelle has something truly beautiful to show you.
Get up. There's something you should see. I know it's early, but this couldn't wait. Watch. I used to hate that sight. The glowing sky, the long shadows, the fading stars. I lived for the red of blood and the black of death. Now, I see the colors between. Look at the sun. What do you see? Beauty. The dawn was my torment. Rustling leaves, agony. I couldn't wait to escape this place. Now, I revel in it. I revel in you. You showed me the betweens and beyonds. Between war and peace. Beyond passion and obsession. Most importantly, you showed me freedom. There's more, but I don't know how to say it. I don't know what to call it. I just know. Whatever comes next, I want you near. When all this is over, will you stay with me? For good? Jacques von Vindu, source of my joy.
It is so good. I know that we've talked about this on so many different characters, that there occasionally is a difference between their romance culmination scene and that they are just fucking in this scene. This is their romance culmination. This is where everything comes to a beautiful and touching and just... She finally learns that there are words missing from her vocabulary, and she tells you that. Not only is this scene beautiful just listening to it, with the softer, it almost, the scene starts at sunrise. She takes you onto the roof of whatever part of Baldur's Gate you're staying in. And you look out over the river and she explains to you what it looks like through her eyes. Most of the time you're playing as a Tav, and Tav is Baldurian. This is something they've seen before, but seeing it through Lazelle's eyes brings such a different meaning to it. Now, for me, Lazelle, she came into this knowing nothing of this Fae run, all the way to seeing all of its beauty. And that beauty now includes you. From your pheromones are straight up making me horny, to you are worthy to protect me. Now, to I have learned how to express true vulnerability and emotion because of you. I love it. It's such a good one. I'm happy.
I distinctly remember when I first watched the Lazelle romance video back when, like, before we even started doing the Baldur's Gate episodes. I planned to romance her in a playthrough at some point, but I just wanted to see for research purposes, and, like, this scene made me actually cry the first time I watched it, because it's so good. Like, this game overall is just such a masterclass in character arcs and development, and like, I can't even think of a game where the companions are as well-rounded and as emotionally attached to, like, I'm emotionally attached to them as strongly as I am in this game. Like, Dragon Age comes very close. Mass Effect comes very close. It's very, very close. But most of my attachment comes from nostalgia with those games. Like, this game is new. This game does it so well. This game does it the way I wish all games did. Romance. For Lazelle, it's like such a wonderful just 180. Like, to think this scene she's describing to you and woke you up for, as she said earlier in the game, you're wasting your resting time. And now she's willing to waste your resting time to show something to you that's super cute and beautiful. And to think when she was a little Gith girl, she was up on this asteroid trailing after the moon, looking down on Faerun with disdain because she was taught that. And now she can see what life is worth living for because she didn't know what that was. Like, her whole life was about bringing the head of an Illithid to Vlakith to be ascended, which she doesn't know what that means yet. And we're going to talk about that in just a few minutes because that is a possible ending for her in this game. And it is a possible ending if you romance her, because she can stay loyal to Vlakith and you can romance her. Although I don't recommend it, because you don't end up together. If you want a happy ending, it's not that one. But yeah, this scene is so well done. Like, I would have never imagined that the Lazelle we meet on the Nautiloid is this same Lazelle. And the fact that it makes sense after you've played through the game just goes to show how well written it is. Like, well done, everybody. And performed. Like, God, Devra, please. You know?
Right? So good. And, you know, I know people who absolutely love her and love her romance. And it's funny because I was like, I don't, like, the person I talked to the most about it is like, I don't see you as a Lazellemancer. Like, this is not the relationship for you. What are you talking about? And then I get to this Act 3 scene and I go, oh, now I get it. You were willing to put up with and fight through the, I want to lick the sweat off of your balls. You know, that now makes sense to me.
But, like, she's got multitudes, you know, that part of her is still there. It's like she's just grown. And I love, that's what I'm saying, like back when we were talking about her Source of My Bruises nickname, I really feel like that must be like some Gith cultural endearment. But now Source of My Joy is what she's always felt like this whole time. This is the true nickname.
Oh, okay, we have one last part of the game to talk about, and that is endgame. There are a number of ways that this game can end, so here's your fucking spoiler alert. But you probably already know that by now. But specifically for Laezel, these are the following endings. War against Vlokith with Orpheus. Tasked by Orpheus to kill Vlokith. Or ascension. The only viable option, if Laezel is loyal to Vlokith, is to kill Orpheus. Whether that is letting the Emperor do it, or if you betrayed the Emperor, she will kill him after the final battle. But that will lead to her ascending, which is just Vlokith killing her and sucking up her life force as the little energy vampire that she is. Probably. The door closed before we could actually see what happened. But the scene was creepy, and whatever it was wasn't good. Withers. Well, Withers will confirm that she is gone, that he cannot sense her anymore. And that is that. It's obviously not ideal for Laezel or for you as her lover. But if she declares her loyalty to Orpheus, she will either fly off with him on the Red Dragon to battle Vlokith, or fly off in his stead if he becomes a mind flayer and dies.
Yeah, or you can do what I did accidentally, kind of, on my first playthrough. The option where you have the Emperor eat Orpheus's brain, and then you can succeed a super high-level dice roll to persuade Laezel to stay with you as a lone wandering Gith, not under Vlokith's control, or a part of the Prince of the Comet Revolution. You know, while this allows her to live life on her own terms, it must be lonely for someone raised in such a collectivist society. I think it's obviously still better than being energetically eaten by Vlokith. Also, if she turns against Vlokith and has the Gith egg from Kresh Yilek in her inventory at the end of the game, the egg will hatch, and she'll name her son Zhan? Zhan? I don't really know how to say that. I never heard her say it. And it means freedom, and she will vow that he will have the freedom to choose his own path, which I think is super cute. I actually didn't get the Gith egg my first playthrough, but I have it now, so I'll see what that entails when I finish this playthrough.
Yeah. So I've had a couple different ways that this has all played out. Most of the time I side with Orpheus. Every time I've gotten the hammer and I have broken Orpheus free, whether he is then eaten by the Emperor or he's then turns into the Mind Flayer, I've been back and forth on those. I have also romanced Laezel on my dirge run. So for my dirge, who was full evil, the first couple of romance interactions with Laezel were a perfect fit for him. Like, that was game fucking on. Sitting on the rooftop as Dirge didn't fit so much well with him, but I absolutely loved it for her. Like, I loved it. I loved it for me playing, but I was like, Dirge is going to slaughter you in your sleep now, honey. I'm sorry.
I'm surprised she romanced him, because a lot of the time she doesn't like dirges who indulge in the urge, because she sees it as like wasteful. She's got like some sort of honor code with her evil side.
As long as you still make all of the small decisions to keep her loyalty rating, approval rating high enough, then you're good. So now on my run after that, where I'm now romancing Will, I kept her loyal to Vlaketh, and the Emperor killed Orpheus. I didn't even go to the House of Hope. I didn't get the hammer. I barely spoke to Raphael at all. I'm currently in the castle walls now, so I'll be getting her epilogue probably tonight, or if not that, then over the weekend. So it'll be a little bit interesting, because I kind of want her... I don't want to ascend her. I don't want her to die. But I do have the Gith egg on me. I didn't know that that was a thing, so that's cool.
I don't know if it'll hatch if you're loyal. I mean, I don't know, because I only researched this, but it said if you have to betray her and have it in her inventory, from what I saw. So I don't know if anything will happen with the egg. And also, if you are stay loyal to her, I think you ascend no matter what. Like,
I can't persuade her to stay.
I don't think so, but I don't know. Let me know. There's so much to this game, I have no idea.
Right. She was happy that the Emperor killed Orpheus, though. So that's good, I guess.
It was so horrific the first time I saw that happen. All of my companions were like, ugh. It was so funny.
So one thing that we didn't bring up in this, and it's kind of like one of my final thoughts that I had about the Lazelle romance, was I'm big on PDA. I'm big on physical affection, and so are all of my Tavs. I kiss whoever I'm dating at least twice, if not more, each and every time I load up the game. Like, load in, go and kiss my current lover. And then right before I hit save at the end of the night, I also give them another smooch because I love that. I didn't like the fact that I had to pass a persuasion check in order to convince Lazelle that having downtime camp kisses was a good thing. That felt a little bit icky on my part. I didn't want to have to roll.
Do you only have to do it one time or every time?
No, just the one time.
Okay. Yeah. I am not a huge PDA person, but I still think... I don't know what else you could have called it, but persuade, like, that particular word sounds manipulative in the context of, like, a physical affection interaction. So it kind of sounds like you're like, come on, like, kind of bullying her in a way, even though that's not how it plays out. But, like, you could read it that way, I guess. I don't know.
I think I wouldn't have minded it as much if it was a conversation, like not a dice roll persuasion check, because with a dice rolled persuasion check, you can cast friendship, you can cast guidance, you can magically disable her to be more willing and perceptive to receive your sexual advances. So... It's a stretch, but it's almost like I'm going to roofie you for a second so that way you're more compliant to do what I want to do with you. And I didn't like that. I still did it because I wanted to see all of her kisses, because I do a romance podcast and part of that is the research of being able to see all these things. But in that moment, I didn't really like the fact that I had to persuade her to do it.
I wonder if, I wouldn't be surprised with this game, but I wonder if you don't persuade roll that. I imagine that's like in Act 2 after that fight scene. And then if you wait till after the Act 3 sunrise scene, I wonder if you don't have to persuade her anymore. That would be nice, but I'm not sure if that's real because I haven't played it that way, so I don't know.
That's a valid thing. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I have strategic saves. I could go back and play it for a little while or go and see if maybe, you know, just selecting the I would like to kiss you, but not doing a persuasion check for a little while to see if maybe I could just get it naturally over time.
Yeah, because that would make sense if she's like, you know, opening up and like coming around to the idea of a more, as we would say, normal view of how relationships go versus the Githyanki view that I think would fall in line with that versus like you just have to kind of convince her that PDA is part of what you want and she'll go with it. I don't know, but I don't know how it works.
She says something along the lines of, I'm not used to expressing my flesh bond with somebody publicly.
Girl, we know. I agree with that. I love the kisses. It makes me extremely happy. I still wish we could hug people whenever we wanted to. I want to give hugs all the time. Let me give huggies. But, okay, so my thought about Lazelle, which kind of also applies to Astarion, actually, which is like these characters with so much self-determinism and stubbornness, like it's the part of the trope about the Baronic hero that I love so much of like, once you get in there, once you get past their walls, it is so satisfying to be that special someone. Like, I freaking love that. That is my drug of choice. I want to be that one. I want to be the special one. Got past your walls. I'm the only one you open up to. I am the only one you've ever loved. Oh yeah, hell yeah, give me that. I want that. So, super satisfying about Lazelle's romance. I love that so much. I've only ever made her a bestie in my playthroughs so far. But her romance is so good. She's like a PR campaign for Githyanki too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that you might enjoy like her full romance getting past, you know, the bits and pieces that you don't like.
I want to romance her as a gift to see, like, to see how that is. I want to play as a Githyanki. My sister has.
Yeah. All right. Any final thoughts on Lazelle?
She is Basil. Even if I won't romance her, I love her. I've loved her since I first saw her. I don't care what anyone says. She is so cute. People who say she's ugly, I need them to shut up. They're wrong. I love her. She's so cute. I love everything about her. I want a little bit of Lazelle in my life. Like, I could use some of her anger and confrontationalism, you know, in my life. Not too much, just a little bit.
Just a little bit. All right. Agreed. She is not my canon romance, but definitely a romance that I fully and thoroughly enjoyed. Also, reclassing her into a monk makes her a fucking badass. Are you kidding me? Holy shit. Monk Lazelle, also equal badass Lazelle. So there's your little gamer tip on that one. And she is adorable. Anybody who doesn't think she's cute needs to look at her face a little bit longer.
Honestly, her eyes. I love her eyes. Everything about her, but especially her eyes. She's always got the cutest expression. Anyway, even when she looks mad, it's just cute to me. I don't know.
Oh, all right. If you like what you are hearing, please be sure to leave a review on iTunes or on Spotify and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. You can now find me on the Cyberpunk Lorecast with my co-host Toasty, where we explore the foundations of the past, the state of Night City today, and the news of the future for all things cyberpunk. Make sure you check out Scyther Audio's newest fan-made production, The Avengers, the audio drama, where you can hear me and several of my podcasting friends. You can also reach out to me in our Two Girls, One Ship channel on the Robots Radio Discord. Come give us a follow on all the social medias and on patreon.com/twogirlsoneship. Our theme music was composed by the ever-talented Pipeman Studios, and our artwork was designed by the esteemed Let's Not. Links to those are in the description.
I'm on the Robots Radio Discord as well, and in our own Two Girls, One Ship Discord server where we nerd out on all our favorite CGI significant others sometimes. I feel like I haven't been very active in there lately, I'm sorry. But anyway, be sure to check out our live streams on Twitch on Fridays at 10:30 p.m. Eastern Time, 7:30 p.m. Pacific Time. Our podcast episodes release on Mondays because you need at least one good thing on a Monday.
So thanks for listening, and remember,
beauty is in the eye of the controller.
Are you a fan of Elden Ring? Are you confused about the lore as pretty much everyone else? We've got you covered. Check out the Elden Archives, a lore podcast that helps to explain every little confusing detail about the lands between. Things like what exactly happened on the Night of the Black Knives, or what we really know about characters like Mikala. Just like the show you're listening to now, we're on the Robots Radio Network, so you know it'll be good. Wondering how to find the show? Easy. Either go to robotsradio.net or search Elden Archives on whatever podcatcher you're using right now. Bookmark the show for later, and we'll see you in the lands between. Again, that's The Elden Archives, FromSoft Lorecast, available everywhere.